Hello, this is episode number 20 of Tech Policy Weekly from the Technology Liberation Front for Thursday, July 12, 2007. I'm your host, Adam Peer of the Progress and Freedom Foundation. Before getting started today, I wanted to let our listeners know that beginning with this episode of Tech Policy Weekly, we'll be changing our format of podcast slightly so we can spend more time focusing on the critical tech policy issues today. From now on, instead of trying to cover three or four issues during each week, we're going to try to focus primarily on just one issue each week and discuss it in more detail. If we have the time at the end of the show, we might make quick mention of a few other things that are going on in the tech world. On this week's show, we're going to be focusing on broadband statistics and the ongoing debate about America's global standing in terms of broadband diffusion and competitiveness. Joining us to discuss this issue with us this week is my colleague Scott Walston, who serves the Director of Communications Policy Studies at the Progress and Freedom Foundation. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hi, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us for today's discussion are my fellow Technology Liberation Front contributors, Tim Lee of the Cato Institute. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Adam.
And James Gattuso of the Heritage Foundation. Hello, James.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Scott, you've been quite active over the past year on this issue, and it seems that I increasingly see you rushing out the door here to go off to speak on this issue at various events, congressional hearings, and even to the press. And you recently published a provocatively titled piece called Everything You Hear About Broadband in the U.S. is Wrong. So before we get into your specific views on the subject, begin by telling us why you think it is that this issue has generated so much attention, and give us a feel for where you think things currently stand in terms of government action or activity on this front.
Well, explaining why it's gotten so much attention, I think, is it's not so easy. I think part of it is that people, everyone wants to be number one. And so there's a little bit of fear maybe associated with it when they see the U.S. ranked so far down the list. I think that's partly what's driven the debate. And also that so many people involved in this debate are very heavy broadband users and, you know, can't imagine life without it and always want more and faster speeds when I think not everybody is like that. And some people are perfectly happy to have, perfectly happy with slower speeds and don't need the very high bandwidth that many of us really enjoy.
Right. So what do you make of these current broadband statistics and these international comparisons that we hear people bally about in these debates?
Well, I think rankings, first of all, are a really bad way to make policy. You want to take whatever data you have and figure out the right way to analyze it. Rankings themselves is almost never going to be the right way. In an analysis, you want to control for the things that you can't affect, like population density, and try to test for the effects of policies you might be able to affect, like platform competition, for example. One of the problems is when you say something like that, people may interpret that as trying to be an apologist and say that, oh, it's all explained by population density or something like that. And that's not the point at all. The point is thinking about the right way to analyze data. And like I said, that's controlling for certain factors like population density, which is strongly correlated with it, in order to try to identify factors that might be important.
So, Scott, could you, just for listeners who haven't followed this debate real closely, could you just run us down quickly what some of the popular claims are and what kind of statistics we're talking about here?
Sure. So the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, tracks broadband penetration. They do broadband number of connections per capita across all OECD countries. And they've been doing this since about 2000 or 2001. And they sort of just take the number of broadband connections and they add them up for each country and divide it by the population. The U.S. has slowly been, I guess, going down that list. And we're in the last rankings, which come out every 6 months, we were about 15th in OECD countries, among the OECD countries. And that's sort of where the debate starts. And people look at the rankings and think that there must be something wrong with broadband in the United States and that therefore we must do something. And that's also fueled by, or I say, I should say it's complemented by other reports that supposedly show the United States with very slow speeds, very, very little bandwidth relative to other countries. And that's, and you know, there are lots of problems with the way that these numbers are constructed in the first place. The way the OECD puts together these numbers is they call regulators, they try to contact the various providers in different countries and just get to just get the number of connections. The problem is that there's no consistency across countries for the way that they get the numbers, and they publish no sources at all for the numbers. So we just don't know where the numbers come from. This is not the OECD trying to cover anything up. It's just that, it doesn't allow us to know whether they're comparing apples to apples and or apples to oranges or apples to something else. And then another problem with the OECD data itself is that it excludes really huge categories. So, for example, it doesn't include any broadband connections at universities. And that's a big deal because the U.S. has more students per capita than any other OECD country, except, I believe, South Korea and New Zealand. And students in the U.S. are much more likely to live on campus than elsewhere. So that's a number that's not being counted and affects the U.S. more than other countries. Another is business connections. In theory, the OECD numbers include residential and business connections, but it certainly excludes a large number of business connections. It's hard to know how many. The reason is because it can't count, it doesn't include any connections done through, what are called special access lines, these very high capacity data tubes that connect big buildings. So any computer that's in a big building at a company isn't going to be counted. And again, this isn't the OECD's fault. The FCC's numbers also don't include those because it's very hard for a provider to know what's going through those special access lines. But for historic reasons, special access has generally been priced more cheaply in the U.S. than in European countries, for example. So in Europe, companies were more likely to connect to high-speed broadband using methods that are likely to be counted, like DSL and cable, rather than through special access lines. The third big category that's excluded is wireless connections. And that's getting to be an increasingly important platform. Now, in this case, I don't know, whether that count makes the U.S. look, relatively better or worse than other countries. But it's just sort of another example of a big part of the broadband landscape that's not included in the OECD numbers.
So, Scott, the statistic that I've seen that has seemed most problematic for me is not the penetration number, but the speed numbers. That I think I've seen statistics that the United States has on the order of 2 or 3 megabit connections, and Korea has something ridiculous like 50 or 75. Is that part of the same study, or is that a completely different set of statistics?
The OECD does put out some numbers like that, but I'm not exactly sure where the OECD gets that. Generally, they're from other sources, but usually, what those numbers are usually comparing advertised rates across countries rather than actual rates across countries. And there are now, it's a very difficult number to get a hold of, but there are now ways to look at this to see what sorts of speeds, what sorts of bandwidth really is available to consumers around the world. And so anybody can go, for example, to a website to see what speed you're getting upload and what upload and download bandwidth you're getting. And some sites, at least one called speedtest.net, compiles this information around the world. They have servers in every country, and they keep track of this data, and they've had millions of tests, and you can look and see what are the average actual speeds across countries. And you can even drill down to see your specific town, and they'll show it to you as long as there are at least 25 tests in a given area. And the interesting thing about that is that the U.S. has an average of about 4.5 megabits per second. And Japan has about 10 megabits per second, and I believe Sweden is second. But you know, we're around third or fourth, and pretty close to, you know, and lots of industrialized countries are pretty similar. One thing that I think is striking from those data, well, are first that, you know, there really just, in fact, is not this huge discrepancy in broadband speeds. Second, when you look at it, first of all, Korea is not on the list. I mean, they're pretty far down the list. And I began, you know, that seemed very strange to me given what I'd heard. And there are two reasons for it. One is that their number is, in fact, just it's wrong because they don't yet have a server in Korea. So they're picking up international congestion when users in Korea try to test their speeds, which, you know, highlights the point that a lot of things matter in determining how fast information will get to you, not just the connection to your house. But more importantly, it turns out that even in Korea, where very fast speeds may be available, people don't necessarily want them. Korea Telecom has on its website a breakdown of the number of subscribers by each plan that it offers. And more than 80% of its subscribers choose its slowest plan, 4 megabits per second, which, you know, suggests that even in Korea, which is supposedly this great, you know, broadband nirvana, there's not right now huge demand for these very, very high speeds.
You know, Scott, one other thing I wanted to ask you is the question about population density and how that affects this equation. And there's a term you use in your presentation, in your paper on this urbanicity, you know, the amount of urban areas. Why don't you explain that a little bit more and how that affects these numbers?
Right. Well, this urbanicity measure is actually, I think, a pretty clever one that Dan Cray at ITIF came up with. And it recognizes the fact that, you know, how closely packed together people are makes a big difference in how costly it is to wire an area, either wired or wireless, how easy it is to connect an area. Where if people are lumped closer together, you know, you wire their building, you're done. And if, you know, people live in urban and rural areas, it's much harder. But population density itself, just looking at the number of the population divided by the area of the country, doesn't necessarily get it right because, for example, Australia, when you do that, is very, very rural. But, you know, most of the population is concentrated in the cities. And so you want to come up with a measure that, you know, sort of takes that into account. And this measure does. It looks at sort of the share of people living in urban areas and how densely populated those urban areas are. And then, you know, the population density of the rest of the country weighted by, you know, how many people live there. And so you get this nice, measure, of, you know, urbanicity, for lack of a better word. And, you know, there you see Korea is, you know, the most urban, of any country in the world, of any of the OECD countries, and the U.S. is the least urban.
Scott, I've seen numbers on population concentration. Would that be a similar measure? I understood that to be getting at the same thing, how concentrated the population is.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. That sounds like it's a similar sort of thing.
Actually, I did have one other question too. You mentioned all the problems with collecting the data and how that is really insufficient, and you're making some good points there. But is this a case where the OECD could fix the data, and if they got better numbers and put it together, that this could be a useful comparison? Or do you think the very idea of some sort of a league table for broadband, as if it's a sports event, do you think that the idea itself is not of use?
Yeah, that's, I like your comparison, like to a sporting event. Yeah, I think, I mean, that in particular, I'd be very happy to see these rankings disappear. Even if the U.S. were consistently ranked number one, which actually just for statistical reasons is very unlikely to ever happen. But I would, you know, I'd be happy to never see these rankings again. But I do think the OECD data itself can be useful because it does give you some cross-country data over time. So you can construct panel data sets to test the effects of different types of policies. But what the OECD could do is, I mean, I believe that they're doing probably just about the best they can in collecting this cross-country data, because it's just impossible always to get it right. What they need to do is publish their sources and let people know what the potential biases and problems with the data are, so that you can try to correct statistically correct those problems. So a couple of years ago, I guess it wasn't that long ago, maybe it was a year ago, I wrote a paper on the effects of unbundling policies in OECD countries, and I used a lot of that data. But it was an econometric study where I was able to control for, in this case because it was panel data, what are called fixed effects, country-level fixed effects. And so that kind of took care of some of these country-specific problems that might be affecting the data. But again, in that case, I'm not in any way interested in rankings, but the data themselves are useful.
So use the data to get information, but not to see who wins and who loses.
Right.
So wouldn't it be conceivable? I don't know what OECD's budget are, but it seems to me this shouldn't be that hard of a problem to solve. I mean, if at least I'm not sure about the concentration, but for the download speeds, you should be able to build a box for maybe $50 that you just plug into various people's broadband connections, and it measures how fast the connection is. And this seems like the sort of data that would probably cost several tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, but especially if you had cooperation from local governments. Do you know if anybody's tried to actually go out and collect data in the field rather than just relying on unpublished figures?
Well, I know that there are these sites that will record your speed test information. Mm-hmm. And that's, as long as you get a large number of tests, I think those are pretty good. You're likely to have some kind of bias there, probably. I mean, it's people who are interested in their speeds who are likely to be the ones testing them.
Right.
But it's still giving you something. And
right.
We've been there was a study by the Communications Workers of America, the CWA, recently, which did one thing really, really nicely and another thing really, really badly. The thing that they did that was nice was try to get tests of actual speeds all around the country. And so you could compare, states and so on. And so then, these were measures of actual speeds that people were getting. The problem then was that they then compared it to advertised rates around the world, which, of course, is what got all the media attention. So they said, in their studies, the average was, 2 megabits per second or something in the U.S. Meanwhile, in Japan, they're getting 100. And, people hear that and think, oh, my God. But, in fact, that comparison is completely meaningless.
Scott, there are some efforts right now on the Hill, correct me if I'm wrong, to actually spend some money and get some better data. You want to tell us a little bit about what's going on there to the extent that you know about that?
Yeah, it's on the Hill and at the FCC, though, of course, that's not a coincidence. And the question is what sort of broadband data should we collect? Now, part of the debate on the Hill is how would you actually define broadband? The FCC defines it as having at least 200 kilobits per second in at least one direction, up or down. That's pretty slow. People probably wouldn't consider that broadband. The OECD does the same thing. It's 256 kilobits per second. But I think that debate is, that part of the debate is really not constructive. I frankly don't care what we call it. I think we're interested in speeds and technologies that people are using, but I'm not sure why it matters what we call it at all. But beyond that, I think there's an important debate about what type of data should be collected. How do you balance data for policy needs against companies' right to keep what might be competitive information secret, proprietary? And I think it has to start with what problem do we think there is? What data do we need to sort of evaluate whether it's actually a problem? And also, what data would you need to know whether the policy you propose is having any good impact? And I'm not sure that the debate is actually moving along those lines. But there are some, there are some innovative models, like this one called Connect Kentucky, which is getting a lot of attention, which is now also Connect Tennessee and I think Connect Arkansas, where they team up with, it's a sort of a quasi-public-private organization, and they team up with local communities and providers. And essentially, they seem to try to find areas where people are willing to pay for broadband, but for whatever reason, haven't gotten it yet. And so far, it's one that people seem pretty happy with, whether it's the, you know, the governments and the providers. I don't know whether that model really scales up or not, but it's an innovative start.
Scott, did I understand you right to say that you thought the definition of broadband didn't really matter? Because it seems to me that the speed at which you define broadband is critical. That if you're measuring it at 200 as the FCC does, you're measuring a completely different thing than if you're measuring something that's 100 megabits. Could you explain that? Did I misunderstand? Or
no, I mean
it's two different products, in fact.
Well, I think the question is. I mean, there are lots of different products. So, a 200 kilobit per second product is not going to be the same as a 2 megabit per second product, which is not the same as a 20 megabit per second product. That's why I think what we want to know is, I think what we want to know is the types of technologies people are using and the actual speeds that they're getting, rather than sort of creating arbitrary definitions of what is what. That's all I mean.
The speed is still important, but.
Exactly, right. But I think sort of just the question whether, you know, something is called broadband at 200 kilobits per second or whether we don't call it broadband until 1 megabit per second, I don't see how that matters. And, I think the only way it could matter is if they're looking for a way to try to subsidize something and it has to fit under some definition. And I, don't see any particular reason to be doing that right now.
I do remember a time I was talking to a policymaker. I won't say what position he holds, but I asked him where he would define broadband, and he said 10 megabits per second. I asked why, and he said it's a nice round number.
Oh, God. So I think that's probably why. Okay. That's a reason I'm opposed to a definition.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for Tech Policy Weekly this week. I want to thank our special guest, Scott Walston, for joining us this week. And to get more commentary from Tim, James, myself, and the rest of the Technology Liberation Front gang, please visit us at techliberation.com. Also, if you'd like to comment about something you heard on today's show, you can post a comment on our website. Just go to techliberation.com/podcast and leave a comment on the page for this show. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend. Please write a review of the show on iTunes, and don't forget to dig our podcast. Until next week, I'm Adam Thier. See you then.